Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning entertainment podcast. In this episode, we'll be discussing Disney's D23 Expo reveals, a bit of Cobra Kai Season 5, and then we're going to dive into Kevin Smith and his return to the counter with Clerks 3. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today for this episode is my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy. How you doing today?
Good. And it's just you and I this week. Right? Or this episode.
This episode.
This week.
Yeah. Well, you know, because I think this week we're going to actually do the big show with everybody. So this is just something supplemental for everyone to not have to only listen to us play games and reminisce and insult each other on a regular basis. You know.
Yeah. All right. I hope nobody went to a donkey show. We're it's just John and I for this. We're going to talk about D23. We're going to talk about Clerks, Cobra Kai, and a couple other things. But the episode 500 is still coming. We just haven't recorded that yet. And we kind of wanted to get this out because Clerks and Kevin Smith is important to John and I.
Yes.
It's something that we wanted to talk about. And we wouldn't be able to talk about it if we just waited for 500.
No.
Which is coming again.
500!
500. Which is actually, it's probably like 750 at this point with all the extra and bonus stuff. And apparently having episodes 499.3. 0.4, 0.5. This is like 0.6. I don't know where we are.
All the interviews and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's the official 500th episode.
Right.
All right. Let's go to D23. This is Disney's big event because they think they're even bigger than Comic-Con. Like, why go to Comic-Con?
I guess Comic-Con Hall H wasn't enough for them. You know, they sat there and said, you know, Hall H is great. And we can own that Hall H, but why don't we let other people enjoy Hall H, and then we'll start putting on our own show?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess they're doing Hall H and this just
right,
to rub it in that they're the biggest company going, and to remind Warner Brothers we're kicking your ass in the comic book world.
Oh my God, that's. I mean, it's true. There's a lot of truth in that. I wish it wasn't as true, only because I want to see some great different content other than just Marvel. But yeah, it's true.
Well, you're going to get new Daredevil. I'll talk about that in a second, but it's Daredevil, but different.
Daredevil 2.05 B/C.
I feel like they're just throwing a dart on that one, but we'll talk about it in a second.
It's got like 24 episodes.
It's 18 episodes.
Hey, anything more than 8 feels like 24 now.
It kind of does, doesn't it? Whenever you see like 10, like, whoa, hey, easy. My time.
I don't have the ability committing to something like that, you know? 10 episodes?
Hey, before we talk about D23, I actually want to mention, because we haven't talked about The Lord of the Rings.
Oh, my God.
Since it dropped. That's a great show.
Oh, my God. It is a great show. It is beautiful to look at. It's like one of the few things where I'm appreciating my dad's 8K TV for, even though I'm sure it's not an 8K. Like, the vibrance and colors, everything they're doing, like, the characters, I love it all. I'm not one of these people who are like, one ring to rule them all. That's a Clerks throwback. I'm not one of those people. I'm not one of those people who like or adore the Lord of the Rings movie like a lot of people do. It's like, it's a bunch of people walking. That's all it is. They're walking.
But it works for you.
But this works for me. Like this, like there's depth, there's new characters that are amazing, and I love the Harfoots and the hints to who might be what, and I think it's great. I think after we're done talking about this, though, I do want to talk a little bit about She-Hulk.
Well, that'll be a good lead into the D23.
Yeah.
So I am one of those people that think that those movies are fantastic. I'm a Tolkien fan, and I also love the show. Now, I do agree with some people that they are making some changes, but there's nothing that I don't care, that I really care about. Galadriel is a little bit more of an action hero than she is in any of the text, but that's okay. I don't care.
That's
it's fun.
Cool.
Yeah, it's working for me. Mm-hmm. Beautiful world. What I can't understand is this is on Prime Video. The Rings of Power is on Prime Video. And Wheel of Time?
Wheel of Time, yes. Like, the differences between the two shows is stupid.
Why can't their effects even come close to the effects here? I mean, Wheel of Time kind of looks like a CW show at this point now. No offense, CW.
I was gonna say, about to say it's got even more recognizable actors on it, but there's only one recognizable actor, or one and a half recognizable actors.
Yeah, it's pretty much unknowns.
Yeah. And it, although I tend to think that Rosamund Pike is a pretty phenomenal actor as far as...
She's carrying the whole show.
She really is. Time,
sure.
I can't understand how they're the same, like, well, they're on the same platform. They're definitely not the same production company. And I think Warner Brothers owns still part of Lord of the Rings, don't they?
No, it's Prime Video owns it now because they have the TV rights. Warner Brothers has the movie rights.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. That makes sense. All right.
Yep. So Amazon is going all in on the TV version.
Yeah. They went balls deep on that one and it shows.
They did. Uncomfortable analogy. All right, what do you want to talk about She-Hulk?
You know, there's a lot.
I don't like it.
You don't like it?
I don't like it.
What?
Tatiana Maslany is, did I say that right?
Yeah, Tatiana Maslany, yes.
Yeah. She's fantastic.
She's amazing.
I dig the tone.
Uh-huh.
A little bit.
Uh-huh.
It's just okay for me. I mean, I know people are raving about it, and I'm glad people are enjoying it. I just find it okay.
I'm having a lot of fun with it. Like, it's giving me a lot to laugh at. It's giving me, like, She-Hulk, as far as, the animation for She-Hulk leaves a little to be desired. However.
A little?
Yeah. However, there's a lot.
Lou Ferrigno looked better. Well. I'm just saying. I'm going on record. That's not a hot take. That's an actual take.
Well.
Lou Ferrigno's makeup looked better than She-Hulk's does.
It does.
Which is part of the problem.
It does suck that you know, when Ruffalo is on screen as Hulk, he looks 100% better than she does. But I think that has a lot to do with how smooth they're trying to make her look as far as, like, some of these beauty standards they're trying to follow for her. But, like, knowing how, like, that character's on screen sort of makes sense now, because I've seen the 6'7" woman or 6'5" woman who's playing, like, the body double for her.
Okay.
And they're trying to make Tatiana Maslany's face fit on that woman's face, and it just doesn't work. And I think that's where the problem comes in.
It's distracting.
It is a little bit. However,
I do like Madison with a Y, but not where you think it is. I like her.
She was great. Like, I think the show doesn't take itself very seriously, and I think Marvel needed something that doesn't take itself very seriously. It just has a lot of fun, and the fact that, like, I love it when She-Hulk or Tatiana is breaking the fourth wall and talking to us, and like, I love every bit of it. Like, even the twerking part of it, the Madison.
I didn't mind that. That was a fun aside. I don't know why people are freaking out.
Yeah,
about
I don't
that.
Know.
Do they not remember Peter Parker and his stupid dance?
Right.
Is it Zemo? Was it Zemo?
It was Zemo.
Did a dance?
Yeah.
He did a stupid dance, and yeah, so that didn't bother me at all.
I like that they introduced the Wreckers to us.
Sure.
Huh.
I said sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
sure.
They introduced the Wreckers, and they're laying the groundwork for where they got their powers from. So that's actually really kind of cool. But it's not like it's not something in the story that's taking over the entire story. It's still very much her story and the way she sees the world. And I just love it. I love everything about it. It's just fun.
I'm glad you enjoy it. Very expensive sitcom is what it is.
Yeah, it is. Like, the parts of it that I really love is, like, these are, like, conversations I used to have with my partner all the time about how women don't experience life the same way men do. They, you know, where men have the ability of just, like, walking down the street without having to worry about 101 problems that women have to worry about, where they can be, you know, bothered and jumped at or whatever else it is. I like the fact that they're addressing a lot of these things.
I agree with that. And I do like the tone. It's just that CGI, it just takes me out of it so often. And that's disappointing from a show that, you know, is not cheaply made.
Right.
You know, it's not.
Yeah. They've got to do something about it in the long run with further seasons. But yeah, I agree. There's a little bit of it is problematic. However, I'm getting past it.
People like it.
So people like it. That's good.
It's just not my thing. All right. So D23. Bob Chapek, who is, you know, in charge of Disney now. I miss Bob Iger. He seemed to have a better handle on things, but whatever.
Well, I mean, Bob Iger knew the purpose of Disney, which this new guy seems to be making it all about Marvel and Star Wars.
I mean, that's where your money is.
That's right? True.
Yeah, there's something to be said for that. But here's what he said. He said Disney Plus will not just be a movie service platform, but it's going to become an experimental lifestyle platform.
What?
A platform. Hang on. A platform for the whole company to embody both the physical things that you might be able to experience in a theme park, but also the digital experiences that you can get through media. What it seems like he's trying to do is tie in everything Disney. They're making the complete Disney package, which I think might actually be very beneficial to Disney Plus overall. Like if they can make theme parks off of Disney Plus experiences, if they can make them off movies, if they can make maybe you get some kind of benefit. You get benefits from going to the theme parks through Disney Plus or through going to the theater. You get Disney Cruises benefits by going to the theme parks or by Disney Plus or whatever. Like you tie all that together and you have something that nobody else has. You have an entertainment experience, an overall experience that nobody else has the ability to do, save maybe Universal. But I don't think Peacock is going to lead to the same place with that Disney Plus can. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, I get kind of what he's saying. It's a very bold vision, a broad vision, and I'm curious to see where it goes.
Yeah, I get where you're saying about that, and I'm curious to see it as well. I've been really enjoying everything that they've been doing as a company. Now, I don't know if I am in love with as many things Disney as I used to be, but like I do see where he's going, and as trying to develop something or an ecosystem where people have to go back to for everything. How's that anything different than what Apple does with their ecosystem?
It's not. No. And it's all, everything's proprietary. So basically, if you think about it in terms of Apple, I mean, the TV shows are like the freaking cables for everything,
right?
For all the Apple products, because you have to have theirs to actually, you know, get it to work.
Right.
You can't just go to Amazon and buy a cheap one.
No, absolutely. You know, so like, you know, if you buy the cheapo Amazon one, then you're going to miss some functionality, or it's going to eat your phone or something. I don't know. So something like that happens.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Eating the phone is definitely one of the things that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good point. Totally makes sense. Well, they announced a bunch of stuff. We're really going to focus on the bigger things, but we're going to mention some of the things that happened in the D23 Expo. You know, some stuff really isn't that exciting. We got new footage from Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. A lot of this you won't be able to see. That's the downside, right? It's only if you were there. I don't see the benefit to that because, I mean, I get it. You're trying to get people to talk about it like Comic-Con, but at Comic-Con, people are taking illegal videos and stuff and leaking them. So that kind of helps sell your product. Here, it's just kind of talking about it. When you do all of your products at once, only the big stuff really pops. Would you agree with that? Or yeah. Do you like the way they're doing this?
Well, I appreciate it because they're not just taking over Hall H and swinging that big D around like it like that, you know, the D on the Disney. Swinging.
Ooh, nice save. Nice save.
They're not swinging it around like they own the joint. So I do appreciate for that fact, like the ability to have more inclusivity at Hall H at Comic-Con is important. I forget what my point is because I lost the.
Me too.
I lost it after that big Disney thing. So.
All right, we'll move on from there. I like the way they're doing this. I just think it's a lot at once. But they also showed more footage from Black Panther: Wakanda Forever.
Ooh.
Crowd's crazy for that. Looks great. I can't wait to see it. Captain America: New World Order. Shira Haas and Tim Blake Nelson have joined the cast. So that's coming out in theaters May 3rd, 2024. I'm excited for that. I'm excited to see a new iteration of Captain America.
Yeah, me too.
Fantastic Four. This was kind of a big one because Kevin Feige confirmed that Matt Shackman, who did the WandaVision series, is actually going to be directing the reboot that's coming out November 8th, 2024. But there has been no casting confirmed yet. So we don't know. Is it John Krasinski? Is it somebody else? We don't know any of this stuff. And they still aren't telling us. And we kind of thought that was going to be announced. Were you disappointed by that?
Not really. I'm a little tired of hearing about Fantastic Four. I know that they're a tentpole Marvel property. But at the same time,
it's been done
I'm exhausted.
Times.
What's that?
It's been done three times.
It's been done three times. Well, it's been done. There's two different iterations of it. One did a better than the other. We know which one that was. Like, oh, mm-hmm. No, it has been done three times because there was the one in the 90s.
There's a Silver Surfer. Well, there's a Silver Surfer. So I was talking about there's two of those movies. So, yeah, it's been done four times because the other one in the 90s. Yeah.
I don't know if the Fantastic Four franchise is something that's going to get me to run to the theater. And I can't, but I can also say the same thing about, I don't know if when they start redoing X-Men, is it going to be something that's going to get me running to the theater, because I've already seen all that. There are so many other heroes that Marvel can dig from to bring up that I don't need. I don't need the X-Men and Fantastic Four, but there's also been a lot of rumors because just this last week there was a dump of information about who was just signing contracts with Disney and names like Jodie Comer, which is a fan favorite, Henry Cavill, a few other names were thrown out there as far as people who are signing with Marvel right now. I'm going to say it right now. If there's truth to Henry Cavill, it's going to break my heart because it's going to be the signing of the death knell of Henry Cavill Superman.
I mean, it's been like 5 or 6 years since he played Superman. I think you'll know for sure when Shazam comes out and when Black Adam comes out, because if he's not in either one of those, his Superman is no longer part of this world.
Right. Well, I can still be brokenhearted over it.
And the thing people got to remember is those are rumors. Until Disney confirms it, don't get excited about it.
Right.
So far, a lot of that stuff is just random site. There are some specific sites for sure that just love to throw darts and say, oh, we heard an inside source that I think it's total bullshit. I think they just made it up and they just throw it out there because it's going to get clicks. It's going to get a ton of clicks. People are going to click on it. They're going to share it. They're going to tell their friends because they're excited. And that never happens. Very rarely do those happen. But I want Jodie Comer to be whatever.
I'm glad you added to be whatever, because that almost got creepy.
Yeah, no, not trying to take it too far. Thunderbolts.
I don't know what that's like.
Thunderbolts was announced. And it's coming out July 20. It's been announced before, but it's actually expanded upon. The castings were announced.
Yes.
July 26, 2024. That's part of, or the end of Phase 5, I believe. It's the closeout of Phase 5.
Yes.
And here's who they are bringing back. They are bringing back Julia Louis-Dreyfus's Valentina Allegra de Fontaine. Mm-hmm. She's going to manage a team made up of David Harbour's Red Guardian, Hannah John Kamen's Ghost, Wyatt Russell's U.S. Agent, Olga Kurylenko's Taskmaster, Florence Pugh's Yelena Belova, and Sebastian Stan's of Bucky Barnes' Winter Soldier. That's going to be the Thunderbolts team, which sounds pretty awesome. Could be like a Guardians of the Galaxy type movie.
It does sound pretty awesome. I'm excited for that. I'm surprised there's no real heavy in as far as the lineup is concerned. Like, usually
they're all heavies. Half of them are villains.
Well, no,
really?
Okay, so I'm talking about like team format. So you've got your sneaky one, you've got your fighter one, you've got your thinker one, you got this, you got that, but you don't have your big beast, you know? That's what I mean by heavy.
Okay. They'll be, you know, that's coming. It's just not out there yet.
Right.
But it's coming. Or maybe one of these guys. It'll probably be Zemo, be my guess. I bet you he's one of them.
Yeah. I mean, it could be Zemo and Abomination is out of, I won't ruin that for anyone, but Abomination has been brought back into the MCU twice now. So yeah, I mean, it's possible it could be Abomination.
Could be. I'm excited. This is probably one of the movies I'm most excited for, that and Guardians 3 from the Marvel canon, honestly.
Well, Florence Pugh is a really good reason to be excited for it. Like, the way she interacts with just about anything and everyone, probably a phone book, is always something that's enjoyable to watch.
Maybe they'll cast Olivia Wilde as the villain. Sorry. Not nice.
That's too topical humor.
Yes. Topical humor. Yeah.
Maybe her boyfriend will come in and spit on somebody.
Stop. That's pretty funny, actually. Spitgate. Look it up. Don't worry, darling. That whole tour. I feel bad for them because they made a whole movie that nobody's talking about.
They're only
talking about behind the scenes stuff. Too bad. Very sad.
And the poor, like, nose of the grindstone tight end just showing up to do the work.
Oh, God. It's on Twitter, there's a great football analogy for that whole thing. It's great. Lucasfilm has a couple things coming out. One is the thing I'm most excited about, and I don't care, but next year we're getting Indiana Jones 5, and they had a trailer that was shown to the crowd. We can't see it yet. I'm sure they're probably holding it for theatrical. It's fine. I want to see that one in the theater. I actually don't want to watch it on my mobile device. But Harrison Ford addressed the room. He gave a speech where he said, you know, this is it. I will not fall down for you again. It's a beautiful moment because if you've ever followed Harrison Ford, which I have, his entire, well, not his entire career. His entire career. And he's one of my top three all-time favorite actors, easily. The emotion that this guy who never has emotion had was...
Hey, kid, we're going to go ahead and shoot the laser. Don't get cocky.
He's crying. I mean, he's crying, getting so emotional, choked up, talking about this film that I can't wait to see it. And he seems excited about it. I mean, why wouldn't he be? But Phoebe Waller-Bridge, apparently, he was just raving about her and how great she is in this. I'm assuming maybe it's a passing the torch kind of thing, but I don't know. But I just know that that level of emotion got me more excited than I already was. How do you feel about Indiana Jones 5? I know he's old and everybody, Indiana Jones, the broken hip. Boy, I haven't heard that enough.
Yeah. It's going to happen.
It's a good thing. Point. Great point.
Yeah. I don't want to sit there and be like, Indiana Jones means everything to me and I need it to be amazing. It's just going to happen and I'm okay with it happening and I will sit down and watch it. I don't know if they're going to have a body double do all the running for him or whatever, but that they better because he is a national treasure at this point.
I'm very excited for whatever it is. I am that guy. It's my favorite film character by a mile is Indiana Jones. So, yeah, I remember that, you know, Crystal Skull had some wah, wah, wah moments, but on the same token, I'm excited to see where this goes. I think you have some intelligent people behind it, and it's gonna be interesting. And you don't have George Lucas involved, which might be better at this point.
Maybe, because, you know, he obviously ran out of good ideas a long time ago.
Oof. I hope he's listening. He's going to CGI you out of life.
Oh, fine.
Also,
speaking of one of his last good ideas,
Willow, a new trailer for the reimagining of the 1988 fantasy classic was shown. Christian Slater's part of this, by the way. Did you see that?
Oh, great.
Hey, listen, we're going to talk about how I'm Jack Nicholson for the rest of my career. Right. No, I love Christian Slater.
Yeah.
Love him.
He was more Jack Nicholson when he was a kid than he is now, but yes.
That's true, but Cuffs, classic. I don't care what anyone says.
Pump up the volume.
Yeah, those two, but Cuffs. Gleaming the Cube. Heathers, you can throw that out there, but Cuffs. I'm just saying, national treasure. It's got a score by Harold Faltermeyer. I started to call him Axel F, like that's his name. That's just what he's known for. So the cast is fantastic. You've got Warwick Davis returning, Joanne Whaley. Now, obviously, Val Kilmer probably won't be here due to his physical limitations, but maybe I'm sure he'll have a cameo in some form just out of respect. But the trailer released.
They don't have any iPhones in Willow so that he can't do all his lines.
Stop. Yes, they do because Disney is the cable. Willow is the cable.
Right.
They'll make it work.
They'll make it work. They'll
call Tom Cruise, figure out what they did, and they'll make it work.
An iPhone.
I know. I'm just saying maybe there's more to it.
We watched him have a meaningful conversation with a character who's not on screen through an iPhone.
And it was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
It was.
What did you think of the Willow trailer? Because this is people have been excited about this before they saw anything, which surprised me, seeing that it's something that I was kind of shocked they were bringing back.
I was shocked they were bringing it back too. However, I rewatched Willow a couple months ago, and there is so many.
Does it hold up?
It actually does hold up. It holds up in a sense that, like, with its unapologetic love for magic, right off the bat, is something that a lot of fantasy things kind of try to stay away from. Because let's face it, magic in fantasy is kind of like Deus Ex Machina, the person, you know, you get to throw out
the person,
you know, you get to throw out things work just for the sake of working because magic. But Willow was always very unapologetic about it when it first came out. And from this trailer, it absolutely looks like they're being unapologetic about magic as well, which is different than what you have from Game of Thrones and or Ring of Power. Ring of Power isn't using magic the way isn't using magic heavily. Game of Thrones, the only magic there is how to be petty.
Well, I mean, dragons, I guess you could say is magic so far.
Right.
House of the Dragon.
House of the Dragon.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Well, I'm just talking about the pettiness. Like, you know, just a quick aside from Game of Thrones. There's petty, and then there's Daemon Targaryen's petty, which instead of letting his brother come and help him, he throws himself into the middle of a fight and, you know.
Yeah. Kamikaze missions.
That's the kind of magic the Game of Thrones throws at you. Let's talk about marrying a 12-year-old and be petty. And like you don't get that. It looks like this is going into high fantasy with magic and dragons and monsters and everything else like that. And I'm all for it. It's time we start having stuff like this.
High family fantasy. It really feels like the movie recreated.
Yes.
For a new generation.
Like this is to... You know, if you want to say high family fantasy or high family entertainment, think Doctor Who, which has very scary grown up tense moments, but is very, very family friendly. So it's the same kind of idea.
It looks great. 20th Century showed Avatar, The Way of Water. And also, why are they still called 20th Century? Like, can we update this finally?
Well, it used to be 20th Century Fox.
Sure. But we're also not in the 20th century anymore. So, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well. We're Duck Dodgers in the 23rd and a half century.
All right. So they showed Avatar, The Way of Water, new footage from it. And I got to say, everybody's like discounting this. I will not bet against James Cameron.
No.
I just won't. I won't do it.
I'm not a big fan of Avatar to begin with, but I'm not going to bet against James Cameron. Am I going to see this? Yes. Am I going to love it? I don't know, but I didn't like the first movie. Oh, wait, I didn't not like the first movie. Let's say it that way. And am I going to sit there and have a good time watching it? Sure. And yeah, I don't think discounting it is a good idea. It seems a little silly to make this movie so far after the last movie. However, it's been the way of the world lately. We just got Maverick, and Maverick did very well, and we can't
exactly.
You know, we can't. And Maverick was based off a movie that was older, and also Star Wars. So it is what it is.
Also Star Wars. Stay on target. Stay on target. Jesus. And it was basically half of it's a remake, just a shot-for-shot remake almost. So, I mean, and it's still fantastic.
Yeah, you know, I was a little disappointed.
Lots of D being waved around in that one too, but not Disney.
Right, right. Well, you know, there is that double offense dogfight football, the game that they're playing. And I saw more of the guys than I saw of the one girl.
Yeah, well, because that's how it should be. That's how Top Gun should be. Also, that game looks stupid. Volleyball, they should have just played volleyball again. Just play volleyball again. It's fine. Just make that the sport of Top Gun.
That's all we need is volleyball to be like, there's 100
sponsored by Tom Cruise.
There's 101 guys who are out there being bro dogs on the beach right now playing dog fight football now.
We'll see. I mean, if they can bring Maverick back, you know, almost 30 years later, they can bring Avatar. It hasn't been as long as Top Gun.
No wonder, right?
We'll see. Disney live action. Here's some stuff that was a little what? They announced that they're making a prequel to their live-action Lion King called Mufasa, The Lion King, which will be released in 2024. They showed a little sneak peek in the room. We haven't seen that sneak peek. We just saw a title card. But I just want to say, I know how his story ends.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we're just going to go back to his beginning or something.
We're going to see when him and Scar were buddies.
Oh, yeah. And then we'll see the wedge as it comes to
right.
between them, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's what the story is going to be. It's going to be more about how brothers throw each other off a cliff kind of thing.
Yeah, literally. And sometimes almost want to throw their babies off a cliff.
Right.
So, all right. Well, I mean, interesting, but Disney's all about making money. It feels like they're just in the franchise business these days. Do you agree with that?
Well, yeah, we haven't seen anything really new come out of there in a while.
Uh-uh. There's a Tron game. There's a Tron game.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm a little disappointed because I would like to see more Tron movie.
I thought it was a series at first, but nope.
Yeah. They did an animated series of Tron, which I don't know how well that did. However, I just rewatched Tron Legacy, and it's a real shame they didn't pick that up to do more with.
We saw the first look at the Little Mermaid live action remake with Halle Berry,
mm-hmm.
Playing the titular character, the Little Mermaid, and she got to bellow a little bit, and I think she's got the singing chops. That's coming out in summer 2023. I'm looking forward to that.
I am too. I think that's going to be great. I think I know what the ending's going to be, but I think it's going to be great.
What's the ending going to be?
The same as a cartoon.
Somebody like is eating fish at the end, and they're just like, that was delicious.
That was delicious.
I've never had mermaid before.
Yeah, you know.
Because humans ruin everything.
Yeah, right. Well, it's going to be some guy on the back of some boat, like bringing in like this. Oh, there's going to be a huge marlin, and then some chick flies out of the water.
they're deep sea fishing. Part of this. Whoa!
The actual story, the original story of the Little Mermaid, if they went that route, if they're going to go live action, they might as well go that route for.
That's darker.
Oh, much.
Yeah, that's much darker.
Yeah, when she got her legs, it wasn't that she just magically had legs. Like, her tail got split in half, and every time she walked, it was like walking on glass.
Yeah, it seemed very painful. It's a very, very, just almost macabre interpretation of that tale.
Thank God Disney came along, because the other version, kids are like, I don't know why I have to go to a therapist at 5, but it makes sense.
I'll try to pick up the pace here a little bit, but Disney Plus has Hocus Pocus 2. We finally got a trailer for that. Amok, 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 amok. It looked just like the first one.
Yeah.
It looked very similar. I was actually kind of surprised that they recaptured a lot of that, mm-hmm. that little magic, and people seemed excited for it. I'm not a huge Hocus Pocus fan, and Amanda, who's not here this week, loves that movie. So I'm
sure
she'll
actually be here this week.
For 500, no promises, no guarantees.
Right. No guarantees.
But it looks good. Disenchanted. I love seeing Amy Adams back. I don't know if you saw this one or not, but she's coming back to the Enchanted now franchise, and she's got a few moments of darkness coming out in her character. I love her as this character. It's nice to see her just brighten a room instead of all the dour darkness that she's kind of done as an actor for the last several years. So I'm excited for this.
The timing of this is actually really funny when you when I compare it to my life timeline. This came out in 2007, so you're just saying 2020 something, but this came out in 2007, and then The Disenchanted is going to be coming out in this year. So weird.
I don't understand the connection.
I just hate people.
Okay.
All right,
as long as you're making a point for just yourself, that's great.
That's what I said. It's a funny timeline for me. So
it's not funny for us because we don't understand the concept. It's like going in, hey, in joke, and then walking out.
Yeah, well, I know. I mean, I think everyone else gets to be selfish. It's my turn.
Okay. We've also got Peter Pan and Wendy, which is going to be released on Disney Plus in 2023. Cool.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's kind of where I'm at with that. Animated films, we got a bunch of those. There's Elemental, which is coming out June 16th. Elio, which is a new Pixar feature about an 11-year-old dreamer, but it's going to feature America Ferrera and a bunch of other talent, obviously. The plot is Elio is an artistic, creative, and avid indoorsman who finds it hard to fit in. Meanwhile, mom, Olga, runs a top-secret military project and is working to decode a strange signal from outer space, but it's Elio who makes contact, gets beamed into space, and is subsequently mistaken for an intergalactic ambassador for Earth. It's coming out spring 2024.
Elio!
Inside Out 2 was announced. Pixar sequel with Amy Poehler's coming back. Summer 2024. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Maybe they should call it From the Outside In. Huh?
Right. Huh? Right. Right. Because right. Inside Out 2, From the Outside In. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then send us some residuals.
Right.
Strange World, that comes out, I think, this year, November 23rd. And then there's one that this is probably the most excited I've been for, Well, no, Inside Out 2 is something I'm really excited for. I love the first one. It's one of the few Pixar movies I will rave about. I'm not a big animation guy, but I love how deeply thought out that process was and how feelings work and how mental health is important and da 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 da. Like, all that connected wonderfully. If they can do it again, I can't wait to see that. But I'm also excited about Disney Animation's Wish, which stars Ariana DeBose, who I love, as Asha, a 17-year-old heroine who's driven, incredibly smart, and an optimist, a sharp-witted leader in the making who sees darkness that others do not. She's navigating a kingdom of wishes where wishes can literally come true, and she makes an impassioned plea to the stars, wishing for guidance and help, and ends up bringing an actual star, a cosmic force that's a literal ball of energy and communicates through pantomime down from the sky. It just sounds creative as hell, and I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that too. That sounds really great.
Then we get to Marvel, because, you know, they got to have
Didn't
some Marvel.
Didn't we already do Marvel? Wasn't it at the top?
This is TV.
Oh,
okay. This is TV Marvel.
Oh, TV Marvel. Right on.
Because remember, they want to make sure that you never miss an opportunity to watch something Marvel at all times.
Right.
They're going to force it in your eyeballs.
That's the one good thing they have going for them, isn't it?
Yeah, they got that. Ironheart is coming. I think everybody knew that, but Shakira Barrera joined the cast. Secret Invasion, we got a full trailer for that starring Sam Jackson, which premieres in 2023. It's nice to have a little bit of a superhero show that's not about superheroes.
Yeah.
These are just mostly secret agents, and looks really interesting. It looks really down and gritty.
Well, I do want to bring up that the first time we're going to be meeting Ironheart, going back to Ironheart real quick, the first time we're going to be meeting her will likely be in Black Panther.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
She's in the trailer. Black Panther.
Yep.
Armor Wars. Don Cheadle, he's coming back as James Rhodes. He's also on Secret Invasion. But this is going to be a standalone series that will show the character in a whole new light.
That's pretty cool.
I don't know when that's coming out. Yep.
Because there's a lot of things to War Machine that we haven't seen yet. And then letting War Machine have front and center access to the screen. Yeah, let's do that.
I think Terrence Howard was sitting around watching D23 just throwing stuff at the screen.
No, because he probably still believes that he is the only true War Machine.
Probably. I did like him a lot.
He made Loki. More sense, but Don Cheadle works.
Yeah, it works. Loki, season 2, Ki Hek Wan has joined the cast. So I'm excited. Short Round is joining the cast with Tom Hiddleston, Owen Wilson, Sofia Di Martino. And the production is underway. And if you happen to see it, the best picture that came out of D23 is seeing Iquan with Harrison Ford reunited. Just fantastic. Fantastic. To see them together again.
You almost don't recognize Harrison Ford with the size of the smile on his face.
Yeah. The smile is insane. He's just so happy to be there. Now, I really will be angry if Short Round doesn't make an appearance in the new Indiana Jones, because there's no reason why he shouldn't at this point. But he probably won't. So I'm glad I've at least got that picture.
Right.
Echo. Not much new is learned there, except D'Onofrio is definitely going to be a big part of that. Daredevil Born Again. That's one thing we got some information about.
Okay.
D'Onofrio's in this.
104 Cox is in episodes.
This. What's that?
104 episodes.
104 episodes, sure. And they're talking about it as... it's more of a reboot. So if you're thinking it's going to be season 4 to the Netflix show, it is not. It is actually a reboot of the character as we know it. And I think they're going to have more opportunities for humor, is what Charlie Cox implied. More fun. It feels like it's going to be more on brand with Marvel. How do you feel about that as a fan of the original series on Netflix?
I got to say that I love the first season. The second and third season were okay, or... I think I have that right.
Yep.
Right. We're okay. And then the final season, I thought was started out rough and then got better as it went along. And then one of the reasons why it got better as it went along is because Charlie Cox got the smile, you know, and that relationship between him and Foggy was pretty great. And Deborah Ann Woll's character was getting better and better. So like the fun in those relationships was starting to really come out, where instead of it being constantly like well, Matt's doing depressive bullshit again. I gotta go take care of Matt. Like, instead of it being that, it was something more fun. So if they're going to go down that road with Daredevil, I want to see what it is. But I also think that they're going, well, this is, I think they're going to come up with a theme for Daredevil like they have for everything else. Whereas we were constantly reminded in She-Hulk that it's a lawyer show. And it's going to be interesting to see how they do this lawyer show with Daredevil as well. Or if they're going to do a lawyer show. Who knows?
Well, I mean, when you're doing 364 episodes, I think it's important that you understand what the theme is.
Right. No, it really, like when it is 785 episodes, you really got to nail it down.
On episode 925, when it's like CSI Daredevil, CSI Hell's Kitchen, however you want to word it.
I'm really loving this joke.
All right. Werewolf by Night. That is a Halloween themed program starring Gael Garcia Bernal and Laura Donnelly.
Ooh,
and
this is wait.
Yeah, tell me about this. You saw the trailer. It's kind of weird. It almost looks like, remember Grindhouse?
Yes.
Remember, it almost looks like that Nick Cage, Werewolves of the SS
yeah,
Union.
Yeah, something like
that.
Yeah.
Whatever the hell that was. Yeah, that trailer.
Like, so I'm not very, like, as far as like the story they're following, I don't know where they're digging this up from. Now, there's some eagle-eyed people did find out or did see that we're going to see Marvel's version of Swamp Thing, Man-Thing, because Marvel mm-hmm. comes up with original namings for stuff. Man-Thing is definitely in this. And Laura Donnelly is going to be playing the first vampire hunter for Marvel that we get to see. So we're not going to go and see the Blade vampire hunter first. We're going to see the Buffy vampire hunter first. And that's pretty cool. And I think that like the choice of Laura Donnelly is great, because if you don't know who she is, she is the lead character in The Nevers and she steals that show up and down the street. So
you're excited for this, because it's kind of interesting.
Right? It is.
I mean, it's an interesting for Marvel themselves. It's an interesting look. The trailer, you got to find the trailer, go on YouTube and find it. Werewolf by Night. It is not like anything Marvel has done. It seems very edgy. For them,
it seems like they're going to be having fun for Halloween, and I'm good with that.
I like that they're doing these holiday themed things. I mean, they got a Guardians holiday special coming, so I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff coming from in that respect. Of course, Lucasfilm also for TV has Andor the series. We got a new trailer for that. You're pretty excited about that. That you've been really bummed on Star Wars as of late.
I've been really bummed on Star Wars. Like, the only thing I'm surprised that I enjoy The Mandalorian. I did not like Boba Fett. I don't remember if there's anything else that has been Star Wars.
Bad Batch. They did Bad Batch.
Oh, they did Bad Batch. But yeah. I haven't been watching any of their animated stuff, because the animation style is something that drives me a little bit nuts. Andor interest, like, I have an interest for Andor because it is something that's completely seems to be devoid of anything that's Skywalker-ish, as well as it talks about the beginning of the actual beginning of the rebellion, and you get to follow Andor, of course, because it is his show, and Diego Luna played him in Rogue One. But it looks like we're going to also get more background on a character who I think is somebody who doesn't get enough credit in the Star Wars universe, which is Mon Mothma. And Mon Mothma, if you remember, the first time we actually see her is Return of the Jedi. After the events of Return of the Jedi, she essentially becomes the Grand Chancellor of the New Republic, and in furthering story, she's a pretty big character, and this to give her the opportunity to be front and center on this, or at least to have more of a depth added to her character, I think it's going to be pretty great.
I'm not that excited for that personally. I wasn't a huge Rogue One fan. Didn't love his character. I mean, I'll probably check it out, but I gotta be honest, Boba Fett really, really soured me.
Anything.
It wasn't Mandalorian. I thought it was such a bad show.
It was
such a bad show. And people, the last two episodes were great. Yeah. The second to last episode was not about Boba Fett. And the last episode was only cool because there was Mandalorian in it. So yeah, Mandalorian's great.
The second to last episode was a backdoor pilot for The Mandalorian already had a pilot.
It's like when you get halfway through a show and they realize, crap, we got to fill it. We got to get a complete episode with Mandalorian in it because this show sucks. I think it's an indication that your show sucks.
Might be. Maybe. Yeah. Mayhaps.
God. My God, was that a boring show. All right, so we've also got Tales from the... We got to speed up because we got to get to Kevin Smith here. But Tales of the Jedi, he's not actually here. Kevin Smith's not actually here. We're just going to talk about Kevin Smith.
I almost got excited there. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. Tales of the Jedi, the short-form animated anthology series set in the Star Wars universe, showed their first trailer. It comes out October 26th, so look for that. And Bad Batch Season 2 is coming out, so look for that. Disney Plus has new shows, American Born Chinese, which Ki-Hi Kwan is going to be on. Owaju, which is an all-new original long-form series that's in collaboration with Pan-African Comic Book Entertainment Company, Kujali, and it's going to stream in 2023. So that sounds pretty exciting. It's a love letter to Lagos, Nigeria. Mm-hmm. So that looks interesting. The Muppets Mayhem.
Yes!
Wow. Okay. I guess we'll take a pause. So you're a big Muppets nut. Well, you love Puppets.
I love Muppets. The Muppets are great.
It's coming in 2023, so you're getting more Muppets.
Yes.
They're back.
Yes. Wee little Puppet Man.
National Treasure, Edge of History. We got the first trailer to look at that. That premieres December 14th. I got to say, that looked pretty good.
It looks pretty good.
Looks pretty good. I'm sure Nick Cage is watching it going, bullshit, where's my movie? But the show looks pretty good.
I'm more of a treasure protector.
They even showed Ben Franklin's glasses in it. Uh-huh. See that?
Yeah.
So yeah, some nice callbacks to the franchise as a whole. We got a first look at the Santa Clauses, which is Tim Allen, I guess, looking for more Santas in November 16th. People are pretty excited about that. Tim Allen is pretty beloved in that role. So, and then there's a Will Forte Pixar series, which is their first series, Win or Lose, which is streaming on Disney Plus in fall of next year. And Zootopia Plus is getting a new short form series on November 9th, which is, that one was kind of weird, a short form series, but looks good.
That's odd, but okay.
Yeah, it's odd. Okay. Bam. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can join our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider, or we're on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. And we're going to try to do more on TikTok, hopefully soon. So find us on TikTok, but don't get excited about anything just yet, because I don't know what the hell we're going to do with it.
I don't know.
All right, so we're going to go into our spoiler-free reviews. We're going to talk about Clerks 3, but before, we got to talk about Cobra Kai Season 5. And I'm going to tell you this. If you haven't watched the show, I'm not going to sit here and recap the whole damn show, and I'm not going to spoil anything from the show. I'm just going to tell you, Season 5 continues the awesomeness that the first four seasons have gone through. And I also want to once again plug that I hosted a panel with them at C2E2, which you can find on YouTube. Just look for Cobra Kai C2E2, and you'll find the panel.
Long ago.
Hey, you know what? It was for season two, but I still hosted it, bitch. And I'm just letting you know that I hosted it with Ralph Macchio and Billy Zabka. And
the poet,
it's great.
Billy Zabka?
Yes. These guys are both wonderful to hang out with and wonderful on the panel. So find that. Anyway, John, I just want to say that season five continues a tradition of a great series. They do a wonderful job of reintroducing old characters. Ralph Macchio and Billy Zabka are great as usual, but I really, really once again love that Terry Silver is here as the villain, because unlike Kreese, who was almost so over the top, it's kind of hard not to laugh at him.
Right.
Being a villain, Thomas Ian Griffith is just phenomenal as the villain. Like he is, they make a joke about it that he's a Bond villain, but he is kind of like one in this, and he's operating almost on an operatic level for the series. I mean, I really think he infused a sense of excitement into the show that it was sorely lacking in terms of villainy. So now they've all got somebody to unite against, and he is really capable of kicking all of their asses if he really wants to, because he's really the only accomplished martial artist. So yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, you know, I heard that this season has a lot of like real grown-up stakes to it. Is that true?
That's true. Yeah, it gets really I mean, they're really making plans. There's plots, there's alliances, there's underhandedness, there's secret dealings. There's a lot of dark, dark undercurrents of kind of evil going on in this particular season, and it works. Really, really, really works. It kind of amps the stakes up for what was originally supposed to be a 6-season series. I don't know if they're still going to hold to that. I know William Zabka keeps joking that we're going to do 6 and then a trilogy of movies. That's a joke, I think. I don't think that's decided. But if next season is the last season, they've set it up pretty strongly.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, one of these days I'm going to actually sit down and watch this show. But right now the pressure is still too high for me to sit down and watch it.
It will give you joy. It will give you joy. Need some joy.
I got She-Hulk for that.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so let's talk about Kevin Smith.
All right, let's do it.
You good with that?
I'm good with that.
D23 took way longer than I thought it was going to. So I apologize for that. I didn't realize that there was as much released as there was until I started looking at the list. I'm like, wow, there's a lot of shit.
No, this is why there's no, they're not trying to take over Hall H.
Yeah, understood. So Kevin Smith, let's talk about him. I can tell you when I first fell in love with Kevin Smith. It was obviously 1994 when Clerks came out, and I was working at a video store, I believe, at the time. You know, and it was kind of one of those things where you had this guy, and it was the year of independent film, where you had Tarantino blow up with Pulp Fiction, and you had Clerks blow up. Now, Tarantino, obviously, he had a lot of already built momentum from Reservoir Dogs and whatnot, but Kevin Smith came out of nowhere with this little indie film, for people that don't know, about, in black and white, by the way, about two clerks that are just kind of assholes. And one's an asshole and one's just a nice guy trying to deal with life and working in a convenience store and dealing with relationship stuff and 37 dicks and all that other stuff. And, you know,
37 just, Disneys.
Yeah. 37 Disneys. And it came out of nowhere, but it really, for people that love film like we do, or for me personally at the time, it really kind of spoke to me as you can, and I haven't made it, but you can. Anybody can make a film. Anybody can max out their credit cards and make this happen for themselves if they really want to put in the time and the effort. And that's what Kevin Smith did. And he built a career off this movie that he took a chance on himself and made. Now, to me, that says a lot of what I need to know about the man himself, that he took a chance on himself. He bet on himself and he bet big. Now, when did you first fall in love with his work and why?
When Clerks came out, it was something that I enjoyed and appreciated because it was something that, you know, felt like me and my friends getting together and talking, you know, it did feel like that. So it's one of the reasons why I did like it. I didn't start really falling in love with him until later in his career, even to the point where I could probably say that it was likely around the time of one of the things that Kevin Smith started doing was going to colleges and talking to, you know, college students about his life, essentially, you know, these moments where he just talks. And it's not like, you know, he's not doing anything about, you know, really, he's not trying to sell a movie or anything at those times. He's just doing basically his own version of what a stand-up routine is and telling his story to people. And just listening to him and the reverence that he has for his life and his career and the people who got him where he is, it was something that really started to resonate with me. And that's how I absolutely started falling in love with him. I loved his movies. They were great. But as I fell in love with him as a person, where he became somebody that I wanted to know at those moments.
Yeah, he did something magical for people who don't realize. Because I'm sure a lot of people don't even realize that he did. He was doing essentially podcasts before there were podcasts. Because those, and I think it started with those, the videos called the Evening with Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I was always a fan of his movies. My brother and I loved Kevin Smith, and we would watch all the View Askew is his universe, basically. And they're all kind of connected, even though all studios are a little different with his films. But they're all connected in some way. And, you know, I went after Mallrats and Chasing Amy and Dogma and all this other stuff that he was doing. I saw all of it in the theater.
Yep.
Even Mallrats that made $12 when it opened. I was there. Bam. Opening weekend. I love Kevin Smith. But then he started doing An Evening with Kevin Smith. And that was something that I could share with my friends who didn't appreciate the movies as much as I did. Because there's a lot of low-grade humor there that didn't work for everybody. But he started doing those. And what John's talking about is he would tell stories from his adventures as a director. He tells a fantastic story about how he wrote a script for Wild Wild West and he had to have a goddamn spider in it. And, you know, that's one of the best movie stories of all time, I think. And, you know, he would talk about the intricacies of behind the scenes stuff, but he did it, like you said, like a stand-up routine because it was hilarious, absolutely hilarious. He did Q&As like nobody could do. And he did eventually segue into podcasts and stuff, but that was like the first podcast because what he was doing was essentially a podcast.
Yeah.
It wasn't so much, or at least a podcast as we know it now. It wasn't so much telling jokes. It was just basically his brand of storytelling of his own personal experiences, which is what podcasts are. And in a way, I would make the case that Kevin Smith is the very foundation for what podcasts became.
I could see that. Like him and Smodcast was definitely, it's definitely something I could see.
Now, I've been fairly critical of recent years, kind of after Tusk. I still like Tusk a lot. But after Tusk, I felt like there was a dip in quality from time to time with some of Kevin Smith's work. Now, you don't feel the same as I do in that respect. Is that correct? Or
I think, you know, I've become a little apologetic towards some of his movies some of his more recent movies, like Yoga Hosers is something that I found fun, but it wasn't. It's also like definitely not for me. It's just
that's probably the way to look at it. His films have evolved to be more about what he wants to do versus necessarily. Like, I feel like he was making movies that he loved, but also for an audience before.
Right.
And this is kind of, like the last few films he did, like Yoga Hosers and a couple, they were more, this is just, I want to hang out with my kids for one, or my kid for one. I want to do things that I want to do, and I want to do it my way. And I want to, you know, kind of experiment and do my own thing. And I do feel like that's the stage of career he got into.
Yeah, he really got into that sort of career where, it's more about what he doesn't want to chase the trends anymore. He just wants to do the sorts of things that he wants to do. He's the producer behind things like Masters of the Universe, Revelation, which, as far as a He-Man thing is concerned, that is a great example of where He-Man could have gone, you know.
Did you have as much of a problem? Because I know some people lashed out on that. I never watched it, so I can't speak to it.
Right.
But did you like the direction he took with it, right?
Oh, absolutely. Because he didn't make it as much about He-Man. He made it more about Teela and Teela becoming, evolving instead of just being, you know, back up to He-Man and He-Man taking the back seat to a lot of things. Yeah, I did appreciate it because it made the story, it gave the story a depth it never had before. And that's what I think was great about that. But, you know, Zack and Mira Make a Porno.
Zack and Mira Make a Porno.
Yeah. You know, that I got to say, that's as far as like I've been very vocal about my unappreciation or disappreciation or my lack of appreciation for Seth Rogen. However, that's a great movie. And it's got one of the sweetest, tenderest, greatest love scenes that I've seen in a movie in a while. And it's bad. Like it's awkward and it just feels real. You know, there's a lot of things that he's done for TV, you know, The Flash, Supergirl, The Goldbergs. He's done a lot of these things where his particular brand of how he pumps up a crowd and how he pumps up a group of actors becomes very evident. And he's just got a magic to him that I think is that people don't appreciate as much as they should. That one of his Evening with Kevin Smith's,
several volumes. He had like volume 1, 2, 3, 4, 12. I don't know what the number is.
Yeah. I wouldn't be where I am today as far as my self-worth if it wasn't for one of these these tapings, just because what he says is something that really just resonated with me, because I was at the time before this, I was kind of lost. I was trying to figure out, like, why do I feel so alone with my art stuff? And why do I feel like, you know, and why do I feel like just nothing's working out? And where am I going to go? And what is happening? And I was just really depressed and lost over it. And I was watching him talk about his appreciation for artists and the easiest thing you can do for an artist, and which is just to, you know, is to just show support to any artists around you, because those people are the people who are creating worlds that end up enjoying, and it costs you nothing to be kind to your friends, family, whatever, who are artists trying to create a more beautiful world for you to look into. And it just struck me right there and then, because I felt like that was something speaking directly to me about how lost I was. And it came from him, and it made me cry. And I think, and I'll always be thankful to him for that, because it really gave me a lot more drive in my the art direction of my life.
Well, that's kind of beautiful, man.
Yeah.
You shared something personal. Do you want a hug or?
No, fuck off.
Okay. Thanks.
Why don't you take this big D and just go have a good time? Well,
getting with the D. You know, I realized when I was kind of looking through his filmography and kind of reflect, I feel like I have been overly harsh on him because of Yogurt Hosers, mostly because I did not enjoy that movie at all. It definitely wasn't for me. And maybe for a filmmaker I love, and I've always loved Kevin Smith, I can't do nothing but sing his praises. I feel like I was so disappointed with that film.
You didn't like Cop Out either.
I didn't hate Cop Out the way other people did.
I love Cop Out.
What I find ironic about it is, you know, I think he obviously had a pretty poor experience. He's spoken to that in that film. But I thought actually Bruce Willis was great in that movie. Yeah. I really felt like he was very David Addison in that movie. And for Moonlighting, if you didn't know what I'm talking about. So to me, it really, really felt like it's not as awful as I just don't like Tracy Morgan. That was my biggest problem. Okay. I'm not a Tracy Morgan fan. I don't like his comedy. I don't find him funny. Where I found Bruce Willis to be very, very hilarious and like carried that whole movie. So it's not like I hate that movie. I just dislike that movie. I actually like Jersey Girl quite a bit. I think Yoga Hosers, I was just so disappointed with that one in particular that it just rubbed me the wrong way. But, you know, overall, I love Kevin Smith. And what I love most about him is he is impossible to root against, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And, you know, the guy had a heart attack and he almost died. And that's a lot of what Clerks 3 is kind of sprung from, is that same thing that he went through. But, you know, what I admire about him is he doesn't seem to care about Hollywood rules. He seems to go by his own rules. He's setting up his own way of doing things. He's changing business in terms of how Hollywood can operate. You know, for Reboot, for Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, he did a road show for that.
Mm-hmm.
And they make more off the home video. That's what basically funded Clerks 3, is because they made so much off the home video portion of that. The Lionsgate said, if you want to do another low budget movie, we'll fund it. And you can still do your road show. And he does that. And he also does Fathom Events, which, you know, September 13th through the 18th, you're going to see Fathom Events for Clerks 3. If you're listening to this after that, it's already gone. But I'm sure it'll be on home video at some point, because that's where they make their money. But he created this this tour model, which is, I mean, he keeps reinventing himself. Like, he reinvented himself as an orator years ago when he started doing an evening with Kevin Smith. And then he started doing the podcast, which was unheard of at the time. When you're sharing Hollywood stories that used to be very, very private, you know, behind the scenes, nobody ever heard about, he's sharing those stories and he just don't give a fuck. Now he's taking a tour and taking his movie to watch with 1,000, 2,000, whatever the number is, people in a screen, and then talk to them about anything they want to talk about after. So he's combining podcasting with filmmaking. And I think, like, he's always trying something different. I heard he's announced that his next thing for 2024 is he's doing Tusks 2. And it's going to be called Tusks with a dollar sign as the Ness, which is, it's kind of a throw. I don't know if you ever heard that joke, the James Cameron joke. That's what he did with Aliens.
Yes.
So it's a throwback to that. And he says he's going to do it. And I mean, I kind of want to see it. I want to see what he does. He made a whole movie based off a podcast joke, what's he going to do next? I mean, you might not always love some of his jokes, and I think he's relied a little too much on Dick and Weed jokes some of the last few movies, and I have talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
But on the same token, I always root for him, and I do think it's easier to appreciate what he's done for filmmaking and film fans in particular than to root against the guy. You know, and I feel like too many now kind of root against him because he's not making the same movies that they want him to make, but he's doing the stuff he wants to do. And I feel like he's earned that. He's earned that right.
He absolutely has. See, his way of connecting with his fans and the people who love what he does is not something that Hollywood does. There's always a barrier between you and whoever it is in Hollywood that you're following, and he doesn't have that barrier. And you know, some people, I do agree that there's too much in the way of Dick and Weed jokes. I obviously prove there's not enough dick jokes in the world, but definitely the weed jokes.
But how much of that is because we don't do weed? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, how much of that is because we don't smoke weed? Seth Rogen does a ton of it too, and it annoys me. So it's not just a Kevin Smith thing. I just don't think weed jokes are that funny because I don't smoke weed.
Kevin Smith is one of the reasons why I don't like Seth Rogen, because it seems like ever since the two of them have met, that's where the downward spiral of like some of these.
You're blaming him.
I do
blame
him.
He introduced weed.
He even tells a story about how Kevin Smith is like, you know, has told a story where he wasn't really that big of a pothead. And it wasn't until like he met Seth Rogen while making Zach and Mira make a porno where Zach was like, all right, I'm going to go ahead and it's me and Kevin Smith and we're going to smoke out. And Kevin's like, yo, back off a little bit. I don't do that. And he's like, what do you mean? You're Kevin Smith. Of course you smoke weed. And ever since then, here we go.
I love that you told that story and you referred to Seth Rogen as Zach, actually, as you told the story.
Did I really?
Yeah. Because you blended them two together. Because maybe you're high. I don't know.
No. Who knows?
Who knows? But yeah, I do think the weed's been a factor.
Yeah.
I think Kevin Smith will admit that the weed's been a factor. I just don't think he cares.
I don't think he cares. And bless him for that, too.
I mean, you get to a point. He's been in this business for a long time, 30 years almost, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he's dealt with a lot of nonsense. I mean, he's had to deal with the Weinstein fallout directly, kind of.
He's trying to do Dogma and Weinstein from jail is blocking him.
What a prick, right?
Yeah.
I mean, do a good thing in your life. Give him the rights to Dogma. Because Harvey Weinstein actually owns that movie outright. So he has to give it to him for him to even show it to people. That's crazy. Which is probably part of why he's trying to do stuff where he owns the art that he makes. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't have to deal with that nonsense anymore. I mean, the guy survived a heart attack. He's trying to, you know, for him, I think he uses the term borrowed time. He's on borrowed time because he should have died with his heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just making the most of, he's doing what he enjoys. And I don't blame him. Rather than just dangling around in the Hollywood system, only doing what they want you to do, he's kind of making his own thing.
Yeah.
I respect it. And I don't always love it, but I respect it.
And he's wildly successful doing it.
Yeah. These road shows are pretty great. So, I mean, I've tried to, and I've seen him speak at Comic-Con a couple times. He's always a great orator. He's just, and he always feels like a guy that can still, even as long as he's been doing Hollywood stuff, can still hit the ground with any fan, talk movies and bullshit for a couple hours.
Yeah,
I would love to have him on the show just to, not even to talk about his filmography, just to talk about movies in general.
Yeah,
I really would.
He would completely take over the show. But yes, it would be definitely worth it. I actually got to see him in person once, and he acknowledged my existence, and I about peed myself.
What did he do? Trip you?
No.
Push you down a set of stairs? How do you acknowledge your presence?
Well, my partner at the time stood up and told him how I had, like, he had changed my outlook on art and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And she told him this, the whole story I kind of shared. And he looked at me and he's like, I'm very happy that happened to you. And, you know, and it hit me that he, like, said those words. Yeah.
And I'm sure he means them.
Yeah.
You know, he seems like he doesn't have time for bullshit. So,
yeah.
I think if he said something to you, he means it. Well, before we talk about Clerks 3, which is the final film in this, trilogy, the what I'm calling the Essential Workers Appreciation Trilogy, What do you think about Kevin Smith now, like in terms of his legacy, as it were?
I thought we just talked about all of that.
Yeah, we kind of did.
Yeah.
All right, we'll move on. But thanks, Kevin Smith. I don't know if he listens to stuff where people talk about his job, but he's been a real inspiration. And I do want to say, like, it was really important to me that as a, I wouldn't say a kid, but as an older, as a younger person.
As an elder Gen Xer?
Easier. Dealing with my own frustrations with not being able to make it in filmmaking because I had parental duties, so to speak, and obligations and responsibilities that kind of took a hindrance. I've always appreciated how much he's tried to inspire other people to get into filmmaking, to do their own thing. And also, like, brought me and my brother together because, you know, we come from different worlds in a lot of ways. And we would always bond over Kevin Smith films. And one Christmas, he actually gave me autographed copies of his DVDs, which was really, I still have and treasure them. So he's really impacted my life a lot more than I think sometimes, you know, in terms of how I see film and filmmaking. All right. So Clerks 3. Now, like I said, it's going to be Phantom Events, September 13th through the 18th. They're going to play it in theaters nationwide. So you got to look for those screenings, but keep in mind, it's not going to be like 2000 theaters. So you got to look for those screens. And also it's going to be a road show where he's going to visit different cities and show the movie and then do a Q&A, which he's famous for afterward, I believe, with Jason Mewes. But here's what it's about. So Kevin Smith returns to the quick stop that made his career for a resounding finish to his Essential Workers Appreciation trilogy with Clerks 3. When we last saw Dante and Randall, who played by Brian O'Halloran and Jeff Anderson, the two had purchased the quick stop and Dante became engaged to a pregnant Becky, who Rosario Dawson is in this movie. It looks the same age as the last movie. It's amazing.
Or even younger. She's
maybe
not
younger. Yeah, she's not. She's a vampire.
Yeah.
Her and Tom Cruise apparently are taking the blood of the innocent.
Right.
So now both guys still own the quick stop. Dante lost Becky and the child to an accident or years earlier. And Randall has kind of become rudderless as he approaches his middle age. So, of course, life takes another hard turn for our hetero life mates when Randall, which is, again, emulating Kevin Smith's own personal health history, suffers a widowmaker. That's a heart attack that takes out pretty much, I think, 80% is the number they use in the movie, of people that cross its path. But Randall remarkably survives. Once he recovers, he understands that he needs to put decades of useless cinema trivia to good use and make a film worthy of his own perceived cinematic brilliance. That I can make a perfect movie thing that all movie fans seem to have, us included. We can always do it better. We always know better. And so now he's going to do better and he's going to make his own movie. So Randall hits the ground running, cranking out a screenplay in record time and recruits Dante as his producer to handle the details. Of course, the past returns for the ride as our heroes are joined by Elias, Travis Furman, who was in the Clerks 2, and he spins from Jesus to Goth in record time this go-round.
Mm-hmm.
Jay and Silent Bob come back, Jason Mewes with some sparkling white veneers, I must say, and Kevin Smith, of course, as Silent Bob, and a slew of Smith's cohorts from decades past to complete Randall's meta-masterpiece, a film that strikingly resembles 1994's Clerks. It's a full circle return in a way to the movie that put Kevin Smith on the map, and it begins and ends with friendship. I find it very interesting how this duo of Dante and Randall have progressed over the years. Where are you on the Clerks films as a whole, first off?
They've become something that I enjoy to something I absolutely adore with this movie.
Really?
This
one kind of elevated the
previous
two.
This one really did. Like, this one really just... It was the perfect way to end that series or that story. You know, when you first meet the Randall and Dante, you know, Randall is basically the same character from this movie to from the first movie to this movie. And there's very little depth to him. Dante, on the other hand, has a little bit more to him. And just watching Dante grow over these years as he's dealing with his best friend who happens to be a wildly selfish person.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, it really is.
I mean, he's almost Donald Trump levels of narcissist.
Yeah.
Different points.
He absolutely is. Like, the only truth in the world that matters to Randall is Randall's truth. And it's not until he starts being faced with some very hard facts that he starts to adjust and change and become more of a person. And when that happens to him, it is gut-wrenching. It is absolutely gut-wrenching to see that change. So, like, as far as these movies are concerned, as a package, they're wonderful.
Yeah, I know a lot of people give Clerks 2 disdain. They have disdain for it. I love Clerks 2. I don't care. I love all three of these movies for different reasons in particular. Mm-hmm. And probably the only character I don't love Elias, but I understand why he's there.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that's more of a just the character in itself. But I love this trilogy, and he's part of the package, so I'm not discounting Elias. I'm just saying, like, as far as all the characters go, he's probably the one that speaks to me least. But I love Clerks. I think Clerks is a prime example of really guerrilla filmmaking and getting something made and making it something that's still memorable. There are lines in that movie that people repeat all the time and don't even realize it's from Clerks. You know, this job would be great if it wasn't for the fucking customers. That's from Clerks. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't realize it. I hear people quoting it and I'll ask them, I'm like, oh, you're a Clerks fan? I'm like, what's Clerks?
What's Clerks?
Seriously, I'm not even supposed to be here today. I don't know how many times I've heard that. And it's from people that have never seen that movie. They've just heard it from other film fans. And I think that right there shows you how important that movie was to film culture and pop culture as a whole. Obviously, the whole Death Star argument, I've heard other people try to recreate that joke. Nobody's ever gotten it right. Mm-mm. Everybody always tells it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But it's masterful there. I love Clerks 2. And Clerks 3 kind of completes it because it's kind of a story of 30 years of friendship that have gone through completely different phases. Meanwhile, you know, Dante, like you said, has really evolved as a person, and he's struggling here because he almost lost his best friend, where his best friend is completely oblivious because he's always been a narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
And he's completely oblivious to the fact that this is impacting the only guy that's ever really stood by me.
Right.
And he's, I think he takes him for granted because he's always there and he knows he'll be there. And, you know, it is a beautiful change because he does finally get an evolution in his character in this movie. And it's such an important thing, I think, for the film series as a whole to have that, even because I know people that have taken decades to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes it takes a really, you know, important, impactful moments to do that. So I think this really completes it, gives it a nice bow, and gives Kevin Smith something to be proud of as a whole. So a lot of this movie is infusing Kevin Smith's personal drama into the situation. Does that work for you? His personal heart attack, Widowmaker, all that jive. I think the doctor's named after his doctor.
Yeah, the doctor. I mean, there's a lot of connection. Dr. Leidenheim is actually the name of the doctor that, you know, because he's talked about his heart attack ad nauseum so much since it happened. And at that, I'm just saying it ad nauseum because he's done it a lot. I don't fault him for it. I think it's fine. As far as this personal story, you do get with this a bit of an insight as to who he thinks he is and who and how that interacts with who people see him as, because I believe that's who Dante and Randall are. Like, Dante and Randall are the person he's afraid he is and the person that he's told he is, and how they interact with each other.
That's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah.
Different parts of his id.
Yeah.
Essentially. And it's ad nauseum, not at nauseum. I'm just...
Sorry. Think it's important. You're right. My bad.
I'm just letting you know, if you're going to throw Latin around, make sure you throw the right Latin, because somebody's going to write a letter and I don't have time to read them.
Right. And I don't check my email. I just actually hit delete now. So at least before when I never checked it, I never actually looked at it. But now that I'm actually have it attached to something where it loads up, I just said, oh, look, email there, delete.
Is it checking it if you just delete it without reading it?
I mean, the first couple of seconds of one was, hey, I tried to reach out to you, and I was like, delete.
Okay, fair enough. So I thought it worked great. It really, I think the movie will probably impact you more if you know that going in, you know?
Yes.
I feel like if you don't know Kevin Smith's personal history, it might not impact. I do think it still impacts you, mm-hmm. but also because as you're watching it as a longtime Kevin Smith fan, you're also kind of seeing it through a different lens, which adds a few layers to it.
I'm sure it does.
All right. So we've talked about this. I've long had a few issues with the excessive dick and weed jokes, and I think we talked about it a little bit, but what about here?
I was really happy that they kept the Dick and Week jokes to Jay and Silent Bob, who aren't as necessarily as involved in this as you would think they would be. I did enjoy watching them having to deal weed in this world where weed is legal, and how there's
<It's> so great
because they now own the video shop, and the video shop is still a theme of being the video shop, because you know you walk in and you see everything, but now that's how they sell their weed, is through the video cases.
They're trying to hide it, but you don't need to hide it.
It's
legal. It's perfectly legal now.
So now, like, they're trying to work everything as if it's a street deal, and people are looking at them like they're crazy, and they just stop and go, we've been doing this since the 90s.
It's a really great joke, honestly. Yeah. It's a really great joke.
It really is.
Yeah. Yeah, and I agree with you. I think it's appropriate here. It feels like the old Kevin Smith. He's going back to the old wheelhouses.
Right.
But this movie's really about Brian O'Halloran and Jeff Anderson, Dante and Randall's friendship, the importance of friendship and taking your friends for granted as a real prominent part of the story. And honestly, if you're looking at it from two sides of Kevin Smith's head, like you were talking about, I guess you could look at it for him taking his own success or his own career for granted in some ways. So in terms of the film, how do you think that played? Because I thought it was a real fairly accurate description of a lot of people's friendships. I think we've all been friends with somebody who didn't appreciate us as much as they should. Right?
I guess you could say that.
Yeah, it's an understatement of the century, maybe.
You know, when I was watching this, I sat there and, you know, I there's been so many times since I've watched Clerks, since I've watched Clerks 2, since I've watched this one, where I sat there and said, yeah, I know that guy. I know that guy who I'm going to throw you the bachelor party that you've always wanted. It's not the bachelor party I always wanted. It's the bachelor party he always wanted. You know, I'm going to, you know, take care of this. I'm going to take care of this place the way you always wanted me to take care of this place. And it's not the way, because the way he's talking to people and the way he's, you know, cleaning up the shop, minding the coffee maker, all of these things were things that he never did for anyone but himself. So I've seen these friendships where one person is putting their energy into the other person, and that other person never realizes that they wouldn't be where they are today if they weren't. Wow, that really is too close to home, isn't it?
John's got more in jokes, more personal in jokes.
I'm just, yeah.
Reflection? You're going to have self-reflection over this movie.
Hey, you know what? I will say that watching the way this friendship plays out made me cry. It touched me emotionally to a degree in which that I was, and I'm not even like, I'm crying. No, I was like, I can't. You know, I was like that whole heaving, crying, like I was a little kid again, just wow, because of how much like that the conversation of their friendship touched me.
Yeah, what really spoke to me is, you know, every friendship I have is a long term friendship. Like, I don't have anybody that I've been friends with for a month. Or just even a year. I mean, everybody is like 5 years or more. I've been friends with my closest friend for 45 years, like since we were almost bebes. So, I mean, it's been a long time. So that's really touched me, because this kind of speaks to that. Mm-hmm. Because when I was watching it, it made me think of him quite a bit, because he and I have nothing in common. We're very, very separate in terms of how we handle things. Now, neither one of us is a narcissist, I don't think. We're both pretty selfless.
You know what they
people.
Say.
Yeah, I do. But it's him, not me. But no, we're both pretty selfless guys, but we just have completely different things that we enjoy. And in terms of like friends, we don't really, outside of when we get together or whatever, we don't do anything similar. You know what I mean? And these guys are very similar in that respect. Like, all they can kind of reflect on is their job and movies,
mm-hmm,
which I don't even have that connection with my closest friend, but it impacted me, because that's the kind of stuff that scares you as you get older, is losing your friend to something like this, to really shaking you up. Cause Dante's really shooken up over this. I mean, mm-hmm, he's really affected the idea of almost losing his friend. Now, his friend is too stubborn to acknowledge that he almost died because he's too, you know, focused on himself, which is really his thing. And that really rung true because I feel like even with, if I'm talking a 45-year-old friendship, if he almost died, I know him and he's too stubborn to acknowledge that he almost died. That's just who he is. And I would probably be shell-shocked by it, oh my God, he almost died. You know, I know how I am. So it really, really rung true to how I could see that going and really felt like a genuine, impactful relationship. Now, his wouldn't be narcissistic reasons. It would just be because he's stubborn and he doesn't want to admit that he almost died. You know, he refuses to go to doctors and stuff. But I could totally see that. I could totally see that. And I felt that. I felt that in my loins. Now, I'm not saying this is, you know, Shawshank Redemption level of Oscar glory in terms of presentations of friendships. But I'm saying that it's impactful because it felt real and it felt genuine and it felt like real friendships can be. And that's what hit me. I didn't cry your strength level.
One of my oldest friends would probably sit there and use his almost dying against me every 5 minutes. Hey, you going to do that for me? No, I'm not going to do that for you, bro. I'm kind of busy. Yeah, but I almost died.
Which is kind of what Randall did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I almost died. Oh, man. We got to hear about this every 5 minutes. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. In terms of the friendship, which is really what the story is about, I was very impressed.
Yes. Very much so impressed.
Now, one thing that, it kind of impressed me. Is Jason Mewes' teeth. I mean, I feel like...
An impression was made.
It's probably not cool to talk about. I'm not making fun of him. I'm genuinely not making fun of him. But it was daunting to get past the glow sometimes when he would talk. Because he obviously has had
either whitening... fit in his mouth.
Yes. I mean, I don't know the situation. I'm definitely not making fun of him. They're still straighter than mine, you know, pretty much. So it's just the obscene glow is almost like a dogma-like glow. It's just... angels sing when he opened his mouth.
What, he opened his mouth and Alanis Morissette was in his mouth?
Yes, 100%. Wasn't that a little bit shocking? It kind of became a fun game. Like, oh, he's going to talk. Get ready.
Yeah. Here it comes.
Here it comes. There's a bright light. Bright light. It's the gateway to heaven.
I can't look away.
I can't look away. But what did you think about the actors? And also the cameos. There's a great scene where they're doing auditions and a lot of the old View Askew throwbacks come back, which is nice.
You know, yes, a lot of View Askew throwbacks come back, but also a lot of people who are just his friends come back for that, yeah. Which, like, you know, he's become very close to people like Justin Long, which he's brought back for several different things. Melissa Benoist and her husband are both in this as far as the cameo scenes are concerned. Austin Zager, who's actually Harley, his daughter's boyfriend currently, he's mm-hmm. in this, and he's a lot of fun. He really tempers down Trevor a lot.
which is necessary,
but he's basically Trevor's Silent Bob, but the way he does
Trevor's Elias.
Okay, right. Elias. He's Elias's Silent Bob, but he's Blockchain Coltrane, and he's
what a great name.
Yeah, it really is. Harley does show up as Jason's daughter in this again. It's from Reboot. So Jay and Silent Reboot. Bob Reboot. And of course, Batfleck shows up and does some line reading, because so you can see that the friendship between Kevin Smith and Ben Affleck is actually still going strong, I think. And Sarah Michelle Gellar.
He was
at
his wedding. He said in a recent interview he was at his wedding. So they're friends again. Thank God.
Thank God. Like, somebody's got to get Batfleck under control and get him back in this bat suit. And I think it can only be Kevin Smith at this point.
Oh, please. Talk him into it.
Talk him into
just
it.
Just do it. Talk
him yeah.
into it. Yeah. So. Yeah, it was really good to have all those throwbacks, especially the throwbacks to Clerks 1.
Yes.
I mean, Veronica and everything. I mean, there's so many if you love that movie, you're going to smile throughout this movie mm-hmm. because there's a lot of connections to it. And yeah, a lot of it's nostalgia. I get it. But if it's no different than Top Gun, Maverick, and everything else that we're nostalgic about these days, so why right. not? It's a perfect opportunity for it. The film really brings together the entirety of Clerks, but also Smith's entire filmography in a way. Did you feel like this was him saying goodbye to his own history, or just saying how thankful he's been to have it?
Well, if you stay through the credits, you get to hear Kevin Smith talk about this, but it is definitely something where, like, this is where, you know, when you listen to him do his whole evening with Kevin Smith bits, and you listen to him, he is somebody who definitely feels like he is someplace where he doesn't belong, that he doesn't understand how he got there, but he loves every single minute of it. And he knows that getting to where he is now was just a small miracle that he's been able to take his closest friends on a trip with him through this. Because if you watch the background, you'll see people from the first Clerks throughout most of his movies. You'll see people from the first Clerks, but you'll also see people like from his comic book men, his closest friends that he put together for comic book men. They're all in this movie as well as like littered throughout his other movies. He is somebody who has made it a point to never forget the people who got him to where he is right now. And so that's what this movie to me is that this is his way of saying thank you to all of them.
Yeah. And earlier I was talking about it's impossible to root against him. That's an important component. When you've got a guy who's been doing this for 30 years and he can still, you know, he's not a big budget filmmaker. He's not Christopher Nolan. Because if Christopher Nolan or Tarantino calls in a favor, well, you're going to be in a $150 million movie. It's pretty easy, I think, to say yes to that. You know, you're going to be in a movie that's going to make $300 million worldwide and it's going to cost $100 some million to make. So you're in a big movie. Kevin Smith is making under $7 million movies. Mm-hmm. Very, very low budget. Very, very, you know, low grade humor, some would say. I wouldn't say that, but some would say that. And so you're agreeing to be in his movie. It's a lot different. Would you agree with that? It's a lot different.
It is a lot different. I would say that this was pretty much like Kevin Smith is probably a bit of the roadmap for Blumhouse.
Sure. Okay, you know, I can see that. You know,
a low budget with a few big names in it with, you know, a different horror, but you know, Blumhouse does horrors, you know, the low budget, few big names go swinging for the fences as far as the story is concerned, and then seeing high returns. So Kevin Smith, low budget movie, probably makes $30 to $50 million, which in the grand scheme of things doesn't sound like a lot of money, but compared to how much he spends making the movies, not, it's actually a nice chunk of change.
I don't know if he's making $30 to $50 million, but with home video, I don't know what those numbers are. So it must be up there a little.
Well, I think I'm using numbers that I think he said before.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. But my point with that was to say yes for those, to get Affleck to keep coming back, that just shows that these people appreciate him. You know, I feel like it's easy to say I love, and don't get me wrong, I love Tarantino and I love Christopher Nolan. I think it's easier to say yes to go back and do those things and make time in their schedule as an actor and whatnot. But when you've got all these guys that are, yeah, I'll be back. I mean, Rosario Dawson has a career that's active. She doesn't need to do Clerks 3.
She doesn't need to be there. Yeah.
No. Ben Affleck doesn't need to do Clerks 3. Mm-mm. There's several actors in here that don't need to be here, but they do it because they appreciate the guy. And I think when you're calling in favors and people show up for your very, very tiny budget movie that isn't even going to really be on many movie screens for very long, and it's going to be part of a roadshow, people might not see it till home video. I think that shows they respect him, mm-hmm. and that's an important component to the Kevin Smith legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. And also, the heart really got me here. It felt very personal. You know, you felt the heart by the end, and especially at the end. And I can't recommend it enough. So $10 full price of admission. What do you give Clerks 3?
I give it $7. It's a solid $7. And that's me tempering my own experience with it, because I watched it when I had COVID. So I was probably in a weird place already. But yeah, $7 is really great.
Yep. $10 full price of admission. I get $7 as well. Obviously, there's some budget restrictions. Some of the humor doesn't hit as much as I would like. There's some jokes where I'm like, okay, let's move past that. But overall, I really enjoy this film. I think it's his best film since Tusk, and best film in years. I really, really, really dug it.
It's definitely his best film in years. Probably his most emotionally impacting one.
Maybe actually best film since Red State, because I think it's better than Tusk, but Red State. Red State was pretty great. I would love to see another Red State-esque movie.
And he gets asked that a lot. When are you going to make another Red State? And one of the things he said was that he wrote Red State and made Red State after the death of his father when he was angry at a lot of things back then, and he just doesn't have that in him anymore.
If it keeps him on a happy train, then don't make one. That's right. Fine. Make another Tusk, though. I will go see that batshit insane premise again.
Definitely.
That suit, though, I still don't like the suit, but I still like the movie. Yeah. It's just it's so bonkers. If you've never seen it, it's so bonkers. It's so bonkers. Well, I think that's going to do it, man. We've talked enough about D23.
I think we just had a whole episode here.
I did mean to have that. I thought we were going to have like 20 minutes, and it worked out to per whole standards. Now we're in 40.
I guess we don't need the other two Jokers. Let's fire those fuckers.
Yeah, they're gone. Yeah. See ya. But they'll be back for episode 500. They'll be there. And then we're going to fire all of them.
One of them. Even Aaron.
Yeah.
Probably me too.
Wouldn't that just be quitting? I don't know. Can I fire myself?
I don't. You know what? I think it's called quiet quitting.
Quiet quitting. That is that stupid term going around, isn't it? Where people just stop working.
No, it's not even that they stop working. They're only working what's expected of them. That's what
Stop work. Well, I guess you're still doing your job. The very, very minimum of your job, right?
Right. That's what if you're fulfilling that, basically quiet quitting is if you're fulfilling what your job description is and that is all, that is quiet quitting.
Isn't that most of the workers on the planet?
It really is. It's like I said, like you said, it's a bullshit term that's being passed around. We don't need to get into it now because it has nothing to do with movies, but it's a funny joke. And I'm sorry, everybody, for even mentioning it.
No, I love it. Look it up because it's actually kind of funny.
Yeah.
All right. You can share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group, on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn, or our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. I'm not kidding. Kevin Smith, if you happen to be listening, please come on. Aaron at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Just email us and we will put you on. We will just talk movies. I don't even have to talk about yours.
Yeah. I promise you I won't freak out too much if you actually show up, Kevin.
I do not think I would actually say that's a lie. But you should still come on. Rate and subscribe us on your preferred podcast app. You can find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter at @RJohnDraws, Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk, and at Sink Into This, which if you're into writing, Smirk is a great podcast that has completed its run, but there's 100 episodes where it's pretty fun. You should check it out. Troy at Troy Heinrichs, and at The Blacklist Exposed and Beyond Westworld, and me on this show as well as Presenting Hitchcock, and at Aaron Smirks on Twitter. And remember, guys, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn and come back later for episode 500.
Yeah, if he showed up here, I'd totally be Chris Farley from Saturday Night Live. You remember that time in the comedy club where that girl was like telling you stuff and you looked right at me? You remember that time?
I thought you were going to say like, and I lived in a van down by the river.
No, not that Chris Farley bit. Oh, I was doing the other Chris Farley bit.
Chris Farley bit. It's the only one I care about.
Because you lived in a van down by the river?
Yeah. Thanks for bringing it up, Dick.